People don't want their kids. Listen, let me tell you, that's why I bet you he's very successful, isn't he? In his.
Oh, dear God, thank you so much for another day. Be with them, be with each listener, each viewer, be with us, Lord, here at Message. Thank you for the opportunity to serve you in this work and bless our conversation today, God. Amen.
Hey y'all, this is What's the Message, and something's going on with Carmela's internet right now. I don't know what's happening.
Yeah.
We at Chalet Nixon have ours plugged in, but apparently she's using Wi-Fi. She's back at the office, and I don't know, things are kind of wonky over there. So I'm hoping that she can get back on and get things going. It's looking like, I don't know, I'm seeing her now, so maybe it's better, hopefully, you know what I'm saying?
Are we on or are we on? What's happening?
We're on.
Like, hey, we got the show. That's what it's like, folks. Robert, this is going to be one of those shows where you're going to be talking out of the blackness of the internet, because
I will cut in if I have to.
Hey, good morning, everyone. I'm sorry. And I apparently the Nixons are able to jump in and say hello where need be. Okay, that's what's going on here, because I'm back. See, everything that just happened, that just goes to show you that we don't necessarily have to be in the office to get things done.
When you're ready. Okay.
You see what I'm saying? Can anybody agree with me? So here today, here we are, episode 67 is what I was trying to say. Welcome to What's the Message. We're having a good time already. All kinds of fun up in here. A lot of interesting things going on this week. I am particularly thinking about and praying for the Reverend William Barber and his whole Poor People's Campaign, because today, all the way through, I believe, the 31st, they're doing a march reminiscent of the march from Selma to Montgomery, only they're going from Germantown, Texas, or Georgetown, Texas, to Austin, Texas, to promote fairness in voting. You may have heard that the Texas legislature has passed a lot of interesting, we believe, are more restricting for voting, some of the legislation has been geared toward taking out any kind of mention or what people perceive as critical race theory. And so they're not supposed to mention that the KKK was morally wrong. There's just a lot going on in Texas. Can you all still hear me? So anyway, we got a lot going on around the world today, but my prayers are with those people who are marching in the Poor People's Campaign, among the people and the causes that they're thinking about. One that's near to my heart is immigration. In particular, we're thinking about children who are still without their parents and separated in different camps. And so that's what I'm thinking about today. But before we get any further, I want to welcome our guests today who have puzzled looks on their faces, but you already saw them because of the glitch here, which we've been kind of doing. Just John and April, maybe you who are a follower and content creators, and our very own relationship RX columnist here at Message Magazine, and have been. We're up on our fourth issue already because they started this year, and they love and have a passion for relationships and coaching, maybe you and me in our relationships. And so we invited them here today because they have an interesting series that they're doing in Message. Basically, the secret thing that your spouse wants you to know that they need. And I know I just, that was too many words right there, but good morning, John and April. How are you all?
Good morning. Hi, we're doing well. Good. You know, this is funny. I went to the office earlier this week and had a similar situation that you're having now. And I was like, why do I even come in here? I went to the office and my internet was completely down. Yours has been wonky, but mine was all the way down. I couldn't even get on the internet.
He had to use his hotspot.
Yeah, I'd use my phone to do a meeting. I was like, why am I here? So I just came back home. So you need to be home, Carmella.
You just go ahead and say something to somebody, okay? Whatever you need. Yes. So, how are you, good people? How's the podcast going? Just John and April.
Going well.
Good.
It is. We had an interesting live last evening. We were just talking to you about it before the show with some guests where we were talking about narcissism and all this stuff. And
being in love with a narcissist.
Yes, and what you're supposed to do in a situation like that and everything. Things are going well. I think God is blessing. We've been trying to grow and progress. We've been on the radio a lot lately. Mm-hmm. This guy, Lance J Radio Network, we've been doing things with him lately and stuff. So things have been going pretty well. And we've been enjoying the articles we've had to write also for Message. So I think God's blessing.
Yes, he is.
I never asked people, how did you all get involved with relationship kind of coaching and everything like that? How did you get involved with that?
It was literally accidental.
It was. John, it was when in the beginning of his ministry, he was supposed to be counseling a couple who actually were way older than us.
Yes.
We were 22 years old.
We just got married and they wanted to get married. And I told them I would do the wedding if we did premarital counseling.
Right. So they came to the house.
Yeah.
And we were just doing a get to know you. I made food. We were all just, you know, talking. And the lady was like, so April, are you going to be at the next one? And I was like, I guess if you want me to. And that was the beginning. It was like, from then on, you know, couples wanted both of us.
So we've actually never not counseled together. Like it always happens when we do premarital counseling. It's the two of us. April started to bring some of her elementary school teacher sort of strategies to make it more interesting. So I think the great parts of what we do as premarital mm-hmm. counseling comes from her background in elementary education and understanding how to make something stick, taking a complex problem and turning it into something easy to understand. you know, April has all these, activities and stuff that she made up and games that we play during our 6 weeks together with couples. I would love to do it if I was, you know what I'm saying?
No, so anyway, it's fun.
She made it a lot of fun. Like mine is just kind of like what I planned to do was like, you know, we'll open the Bible and we'll talk and you know what I'm saying?
He just loves me. That's all this is.
No, it's not it. The best thing we do, I'm telling you now, the part everybody loves about our coaching is the stuff she brings to the table. So it's actually the best accident that's ever happened to us.
It is the best accident. It is. Yeah.
But it kind of progressed when we got to Atlanta. We moved to Atlanta maybe 13 years ago. Yeah. About 13 years ago. Yeah, because we've been here
Atlanta 13. No, babe.
Yes, baby. We were. Oh, you're no, right. You mean 7 years. 8 years ago. Eight. Sorry, 8 years ago.
You're talking about Durham.
Yeah. You're right. So really started in Durham. Durham, North Carolina, we had a very young adult population that went to our church because in Durham, you have a lot of colleges. And so many of those college kids were coming to our church. And we found that we were having a whole bunch more people to counsel because they were young, they were trying to get married. And the same thing happened in Atlanta. When we got to Atlanta, people started saying to us, you guys should start a YouTube channel. And if you did that, we'd be all over it. If, you know, you do something on relationships, it'd be great. Like,
we can't do that.
Right. And so anyway, we kept listening. Yeah. And finally, we moved to Maryland. We decided to start it. And we think they were right. I think that's where people are. And where they go when they want some kind of intervention, answers. Yeah. So we said that's the best place for us to be. So we started putting content on there and it's been working.
This way we can reach people that we wouldn't normally be reaching in the church.
Yeah. And outside the church really too. We're getting a lot more people now who are not necessarily churched, who are coming to us because I think they know that our stuff has a spiritual foundation, but it doesn't feel too maybe ultra traditional or judgmental.
Right.
And I think they're drawn to that. Mm-hmm. So anyway, it's been great.
You all are in it. Tell me, what are you seeing these days? What are some of the major challenges that you're seeing with people that they're coming to you? You mentioned narcissism. I kind of curious about where that came from. What made you think we need to do something on narcissism?
Honestly, I'm not trying to put anybody out there, but we have close friends and family members who are dealing with this.
I'm just kidding.
Trying to put them out there. But you know, when you have people coming to you and they're like, you know, I'm married to a narcissist, you're like, okay, let's look at this. Yeah. But as we studied it more and more, it's like, wow, maybe you are, let's look into this and to see the pain and unhappiness they are living with because of it, because narcissism is like a whole nother level. I mean, we're talking somebody who is only about self, like fully, you know, no empathy. Mm-hmm. There is no care for other people at all. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and everything is about what they want and what they're going to get out of it. And so to see some going through that, we were like, you know, it can't just be them.
Right.
It has to be more.
And we were talking about the beginning of the show, Carmela, narcissistic personality disorder is a clinical diagnosis that we're not capable of diagnosing people because we're not in that field.
Right.
But what we can safely say is that many people that we know at least are dealing with people that have extreme narcissistic behavior. Like when you look at the sort of what's the on the list, the characteristics and stuff like that, there are some people who kind of fit a lot of it. I think that we're living in a time where it's easier to be a narcissist. It feels like it's easier to be a narcissist these days than ever before. And who knows why, but I just think there's sort of a focus on me more now than ever before. And maybe there are some things that contribute to that. Maybe social media is one of them. I don't know.
Seeing more men or women?
The stereotypical person is male.
Yes, but we talked last night.
Yeah, there's a lot.
Realize there's a lot of female. But the thing about narcissists is that you wouldn't. Usually, they're very friendly, and everybody really nice. Likes them.
Right.
Very nice.
Yeah.
So you would not, you know, and we were saying, you know, women can even more so cover that up than men, even though they can cover it up as well. But anyway, it's a whole thing.
Sometimes it's hard to tell.
It's a whole thing, but it's hard to tell. But we found out last night, there's a lot of women out there.
Right. Yes.
So I think it's just a human dilemma, a human problem.
Yeah.
Well, God bless you. I've enjoyed the last couple of issues that I've been working on, in which you, to me, I thought is a very interesting title. Basically, you know, the secret that every wife wants her husband to know, and the secret every husband wants his wife to know. And so as a person who's been married for more than two decades now, I was curious to find out what those secrets are. And I'm like, I'm sad that it didn't come straight to mind, because I was like, I think I should know this. But talk to me about these two main things. Start with the wife, because that's in the current issue of Message magazine, the secret that the wife wants her spouse to know.
So before April says something about that, because I know she has a lot to say, there is something I want to say about what you just said. You just said you were disappointed that you didn't know right away. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of okay. So the title is a little what we call clickbaity.
Yeah.
the idea is
yes.
Of course, yeah. but the idea really is, you wouldn't at first think of this because as a woman and as a wife, there are things that come to your mind about what you care about in relationship that is so different from what your husband needs that it wouldn't come to your mind first. Mm-hmm. And vice versa for the husband. The husband, we're just hardwired so differently when it comes to this stuff. That I don't think the husband's going to automatically know, oh yeah, that's what my wife needs. So it's okay. You don't have to be disappointed that you didn't know right away. I think that's normal. There's nothing wrong with that. So go ahead.
I read all the books.
Right. Exactly. So we were trying to find a way to sort of illuminate something that everybody already knows.
Right.
All right. So you said to start with the women, but I really want to start with the men.
Start with the women.
You sure?
Yeah.
Okay. So what a wife, okay, let me just put it this way. People that grew up in the church, they all read Ephesians 5. And what you hear when people talk is about love and respect, that wives want love and husbands want respect. Mm-hmm. But I think that's oversimplifying it a little bit, because I think that the way that a husband would look at respect is so different from what a wife has in mind that doesn't tell her anything when you say, hey, your husband needs respect. And same thing with the husband. I don't think he thinks of love in the same way that the wife would. So to just say you got to love your wife, that's not enough. You have to break this down in a way. You have to be more specific and say exactly what it is that your spouse actually needs. And that's what we're trying to do here. So it's really just a play on the idea of husbands want respect and wives want love, but it's deeper than that.
Yeah, you know.
Do you want us to tell what it is, or do you want people to actually read the article?
Oh, yes.
They just froze it.
No, look at me. I'm like,
you paused for a minute.
Yeah, your screen was paused. So I wasn't sure. Okay, so you do want us to talk about it. Okay.
Well, we talk about how wives want trustworthiness. You know, they want to trust their husbands, and it's more than just trusting that they won't go out and cheat. I mean, of course we want to trust that, you know, but trusting that they're going to keep their word, you know, trusting that they're going to do what they say they're going to do. Mm-hmm. You know, that's really important in relationships. And, you know, we get a lot of just being marriage coaches. We get a lot of women who are dealing with not having that trust, not, you know, wanting it, but just not getting that from their husbands, being able or who they're dating, even with dating,
but here's what we
doing
found.
What you say you're going to do.
Yes. What we found in the research, though, is that the thing that's so attractive to a wife about trustworthiness is security.
Right.
It's this idea that I can trust my man is going to keep me safe. Right. He's going to be thinking about me. He's going to make sure things are done well. And here's what's crazy. April and I have been married 20 years as well, and it'll be 21 in December. And I think that as you age and go through circumstances, some things change sometimes. I would say, and part of the reason why we even know that this is a thing is because of something we went through recently. I would say that April has always felt like she could trust me to be able to do certain things and make sure things were done and all that kind of stuff. But then a few years ago, I became less trustworthy in that regard. there were some things that I never had a problem with that all of a sudden became an issue. One specifically having to do with money and how we handle it, how things are taken care of, how April never had to worry for 17 years about bills being paid on time, for instance. And then all of a sudden there was something that was going on with me that disrupted that. And it made her less secure than she had been for all those years. I don't even think she realized until it was gone how much she depended on and loved that she could trust her husband.
And I didn't realize how much that was going to impact my attitude towards him.
Right.
Like I didn't even, if somebody were to ask me, if this were to happen, how would you respond? It would not have been the way that I responded. Because when you're in it, it's like, it's a whole different thing than when you're talking about it.
Right.
You know, you're in this and I'm like, okay, I'm almost resenting him in a way. It moved to other things.
Yeah.
You know, so this trustworthiness is deeper than just trusting this, you know, that they're going to
remain faithful. Because she's never worried about that.
No, that's not our issue.
Right.
You know,
okay. I got to cut in here a quick second. Now, I've taken your boot camp class. Okay. Had a great time. I had a great time. Yeah, of course. It's a secret. You know, I changed the names. Names may not reflect actual.
I didn't even know you were in it, man. That's Robert, awesome. You were there. Oh yeah, my God.
I know how to hide. I know how to hide. In fact, my wife and I were going back and forth on one of the lives with some questions. Anyway. So I struggle with understanding the definition of security from a woman's standpoint. See, y'all throw around security all the time. The woman needs to feel secure. I'm like, okay, I got the alarm system. I have guns. I have this. I have that. What is the security thing you're talking about?
Yeah.
I think what we're talking about now, Robert, kind of goes to this. I think
you
use
my name.
Thing.
Hold on a second. You're not supposed.
Oh, my bad.
Number's all hidden.
Did you?
But Robert Downey Jr. is what I meant.
Robert Downey.
I think this trustworthiness is a big part of it. And it's a thing that we as men, I think, need to really explore a little bit more. So I'll give you an example. If your wife asks you to do something and you say, yes, I'm going to do it. And then the day that you said you're going to do it or the time or whatever comes and goes and it never happens, you're actually reinforcing, even subconsciously, to your wife that she really can't count on you.
I can't depend on him.
I can't depend on him.
Wow.
Even when he says he's going to do it.
And that's a security thing.
It's a security. And what I'm saying is we don't understand that as men. And so we don't connect that. And so we don't realize that little things like that actually speak more to their ability to be secure than even something like, you know, having the alarm system, because I got one too. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
April's never worried that I'm going to cheat on her. April's never worried that I'm going to leave the door unlocked at night so that a robber can come in. But lately, she has been wondering, is that bill going to get paid on time? She had to wonder about that because there was a pattern all of a sudden of things that was happening. And by the way, let me just tell you, it was a little complex for me. There were some things going on. I think my, I'm not old enough to have a midlife crisis, am I? I'm only 43.
Yes.
That is you are in midlife crisis.
Okay, so I'm there.
You're not giving your motorcycle and your ear.
She said, we're not giving you permission, but. So April said I should get a motorcycle and get my ear pierced. But anyway, I had some midlife stuff going on. And at the same time, we had this big move, us moving here.
And this was the hardest move we've had.
Hardest move we ever had.
Since we began ministry.
We've done our whole ministry in the same conference. And all of a sudden, we're coming to someplace new. And there were several different things that were happening. It was almost the perfect storm of things. Mm-hmm. And it did something inside of me that I didn't think was going to happen. It caused me to retreat from certain things. So for instance, if there's a bill that needs to be paid or something like that, I'm retreating from facing the responsibility as opposed mm-hmm. to just going ahead and getting that done. I've never done that. That's never been my entire life. That's never been an issue. All of a sudden it became something and I didn't even see what was going on. But in the meantime, it was affecting my wife's ability to feel secure because she felt like she couldn't really trust that I was going to do the things that I said I was going to do, which I'd never had an issue with before. So anyway, that's a big, big thing.
Yeah. But I'm sorry. That's that one definition is so huge that mm-hmm. I think we do not understand. This is not something that's discussed among men. I don't think mm-hmm. we understand security from that standpoint, just mm-hmm. being on top of what you say you're going to do. And the simple
being
fact
dependable.
That, being yeah, dependable.
Yeah, dependable. So important.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
we think yeah. we're dependable because right. we eventually get to it, but it's the time right. frame. Oh boy. Well, thank yeah. you. I'm going to shut up now.
No, but that is important.
Let me tell you something. I know we're glitchy. We're glitchy all over the place. At least I'm glitchy, but I was just going to say this, you know, a lot of people think of security as, does he have a good job? Does he own right. the money and everything? This, and that may be part of it. But what I'm hearing you say is being right as rain is just as good as gold.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So mm-hmm. That's what I'm hearing. Now, let me talk. We only got a few minutes left. I know these busy people have stuff to do. Talk to me about the flip side. And people, this seems like this works for singles as well. Isn't that right?
Yes. Absolutely. Yes, definitely.
Relationship, this is important to exhibit these because this is on some level, this is what men want, this is what women want. So tell me, what is it that the husband wants or the man that you're dating, what is he looking for?
Yeah, so we refer to it kind of like as respect 2.0. Yes, so it is a version of respect, but it's like next level. Mm-hmm. And it's simply this, your man wants to feel like you believe in him. So here's what's crazy about this is that April's need to feel secure and that she can trust me. Mm-hmm. I want to feel like she can trust me or believe in me. That it's such a big need that I have that what's crazy is if I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing,
right,
it actually can make it so exactly. that I'll never get the thing that I actually need from her.
So really, if you are dependable, if you are trustworthy, if you do what you say you're going to do, that makes me believe in you more.
Yes. But what we teach mm-hmm. is that wives or significant others, right. whatever, if you're not married, should start by believing in them. In first. Something that's right, doing it first and something that they can actually believe in. So for instance, believing in my ability to do something well or do something right.
Mm-hmm. So for instance, something, this is just a simple example, but John was putting a table together one time mm-hmm. and, you know, putting the table together. And I came in and I was like, are you going to put that nail over there in that part? And he's like, I got this, you know,
right.
That just that simple little thing was like a way to say, you know, you're doing it, but I'm not sure you can actually do this right. So I need to come in and I need to, you know, make sure are you putting that there? Mm-hmm. What about this? Mm-hmm. Why is this sitting over here on this thing? Mm-hmm. You know, it's like those types of little things, which women can do. I know I do that, can keep that feeling of, you know, I believe in you. I believe you can do this task without mm-hmm. me having to come and direct you and tell you how you need to do it mm-hmm. and where you need to go to get help. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Little stuff like little that stuff. Makes a difference and makes me feel like when she questions stuff in a certain way, when she second guesses mm-hmm. something that I suggest, what that reinforces is, I don't really think
I
you can do
I
this.
I don't believe in, I don't, totally believe in you. Not 100%. Yeah. Not yeah. quite. That's why we say respect 2.0.
Right.
Because this is a next level, especially for people like me. I'm a control freak. Yes, I admit it. Yes. Okay. And I want to know all the details. Mm-hmm. You know, why are you doing that? Yeah. Where are you going to get the money for that? Mm-hmm. Who did you talk to? Mm-hmm. All of those things. But I've had to come to a point where I've had to say, you know what? I'm just going to believe in him, mm-hmm. believe that he's going to get that thing done mm-hmm. and get it done the best way possible for our family mm-hmm. and not question everything. Mm-hmm. Now, can you question? Of course. We're not talking about sitting back and being quiet. You know, I'm not saying that.
We're not talking about patriarchy now.
No.
You know what I'm saying? Okay. We're not into that kind of thing.
But there are times that I've had to say, you know what? I'm just mm-hmm. going to believe that he's going to do this right.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I'm going to back off. Mm-hmm. You know, I think men need that a lot.
In the article, we talk about three different ways. So it's not just that, but it's believing in my ability to do something. It's also believing in who I am as a person, that I do have something to bring to the table. Yes. When my wife exhibits that, it makes me soar. It makes me feel like I can do anything because she believes I can do it. All men want to feel like their woman believes mm-hmm. in them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a form of respect. And I don't think wives necessarily know.
And I think we have more control than we think we do as women. You know, we have so much control. And I don't mean to say it like that, like not in a bad way.
Right. You have the ability to impact your husband's behavior in a way that you don't realize.
Exactly. And believing in him. And showing him that you do is one significant way.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So that's the chicken and the egg issue. That's what I call it, the chicken and the egg. Which one comes first? Which one needs to step in first?
We think that the best relationships are ones where each partner is trying their best to be the first one. Like we're each trying to do this for the other one. We're not necessarily reciprocating. We're not waiting for someone to do something before we do it. We're just going ahead and doing it first. And who knows? Sometimes I beat April to the punch. Sometimes she beats me to the punch. So, you know, it depends on the situation, but we're both trying all the time to give each other this
mm-hmm.
and we're not necessarily waiting on the other. So sometimes it means stepping out and for instance, if April believes in me and wants to demonstrate that, in the moment, she might be doubting whether or not I actually can do it.
Right.
But she doesn't want to show that so that she can, you know, reinforce that. I
keep myself from questioning,
just
let this, because really, if you look at it, what's going to happen, you know, in certain situations, like, is anybody mm-hmm. going to die? No. It may not be the best. It may not turn out perfectly, mm-hmm. but you know what? I want my man to know that I believe in him. So mm-hmm. I'm just going to let him do this the way he's going to do it. And I'm not going to step in like I normally would,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I believe women can start with something as simple as, and we all have been through this, I'm sure, as simple as when it's time to park a car and you're in the car together, just let your man find the parking spot. Don't tell him where he can go. Don't point to the one of why you're not going right here. Just let him find the spot and don't worry if it's far, just walk.
Yeah.
I'm saying, I think it starts with the little things, something mm-hmm. as simple as finding a parking spot. That is, I believe it actually shows that I believe in you,
mm-hmm.
even though it's simple. Very simple.
Can you all hear me?
Yes.
We can now. Yes.
Can you see me?
Yes.
Sort of. Okay. Well, I thank you so much for joining us today. And I'm saying to everyone, listen, whether you are single or married, you got to get message and you got to give it to someone. We've got these relationship experts and you got to follow them. Tell them where they can follow you and watch Just John and April.
So we use that word all the time so that you know it's Just John and April. So if you go to anything like Instagram or Facebook, that's our YouTube channel.
Mm-hmm.
If you just type in Just John and April, you'll find us. We even have a website, www.justjohnandapril.com. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's just John and April. If you remember that, then you can find us anywhere. Just put it in Google and you'll find us.
And we have our Wednesday night live at 9. It's really fun. So mm-hmm. we want you to join us there. And mm-hmm. then on Fridays,
we do a new podcast episode every Friday that's released on YouTube. Yeah. Uh-huh. And the lives are on Facebook and YouTube. So anyway.
Yeah, yeah. We are so blessed to have you all here at Message. And we just like to do these every now and then, these check-ins with you about the things that you're writing for Message, the research that you're doing, what's happening. And this blesses us in our relationship. So just thanks for joining us today. I know you got to go, but we'll talk again soon. God bless.
Thanks for having us, Carmela.
Thank you so much.
Hey, listen, I know I'm glitchy, everyone. If you're still hanging with them, I see our people here in the chat. Miss Gloria Singleton, how you doing? Don L, live from New York. Every time he's here, we got Bulela. I like that. And I'm not even sure if I'm saying the right word or the right name, but I'm glad that you're with us today. And if there's anybody else here, I love the fact that you're working and rolling with us. We are having a good time. It was great to check in with Just John and April because they always have some good information for us. But today, I would just want to take a few moments just to talk through some of the things that have been in the news. As you know, and as I know, we have been watching what's going on with Simone Biles out in Tokyo in the Olympics. Look at me, out at Tokyo, like she's out at the ranch. No, all the way across the world. Simone Biles withdrew from competition this week from the all-around individual competition, I believe. And I've heard lots of analysts talk about what is going on with her, why she's having such a hard time, and why she decided to pull. And of course, you've seen the debate, but there are a lot of things in here that I think are instructive for us or implications that I think we need to be aware of. For Simone Biles, she obviously at the pinnacle of her career as an Olympic athlete was so highly decorated, also has so much pressure. And being there in Tokyo without family for the first time at a competition, being there, there's no audience or crowds. I heard one analyst on CNN say, she has gone through in the ongoing effects and impact of the molestation that went on for so many years with the team doctor for USA Gymnastics, who is now in prison or incarcerated. There's a lot going on. Besides that, she is a young Black woman. And this analyst said, which I thought was very interesting, she is there at the top of her game at a time when racial implications and racism and epithets are at an all-time high, flying across all manner of social media and other media. And so she's got a lot on her plate. And so she decides, you know, I'm not going to do this. I'm going to pull away. And so there's a lot of things in here that I think we should talk about. And so I'm welcoming today our good friend and columnist, Omar Miranda, who is not just a writer, freelance writer, author. He is actually a professional mental health counselor who works with young people and adults, and a lay pastor. And he is a former editor of Insight magazine, a good friend of mine. And I'm glad to see him back because we're working on this story today. And I would love it if you are watching now, if you want to jump in and give us some ideas about what you think needs to be discussed or looked at, I would love for you to put that in the comments. But Omar, good morning. Thanks for joining us today. I'm glad to see you.
Good morning. I'm glad to see you. How are you, Carmela?
Oh, we're good. We're a little glitchy on our internet. But like I said, you know, you and I want to talk about some of these issues today as we go for, you know, sort of writing and discussing this. But there are a lot of implications to the highly publicized decision of not only Simone Biles, but I guess you could say Sha'Carri Richardson, when she had some difficulty a few weeks ago upon learning the death of her mother, decided to smoke weed and tested positive for that in her system. And, you know, she was then penalized. It wasn't just a few weeks ago. Well, I guess it was a few weeks ago, but she was penalized. But, you know, so a lot of discussion has come around the idea of whether there's some self-care, some mental health protection that needs to be in place. So I want to ask you, what, as you're working through these stories and with your own expertise, what do you think is the point that we need to be aware of? Where does the line between resiliency and, I guess, resolve to go forward? What do you, how do you frame that?
You know, this is, Carmela, this is an issue that I deal with our teens and their families and their communities. I educate people on this and counsel people on this almost on a daily basis. This is an issue of, like you said, resiliency versus moving forward. I don't necessarily think this is an issue new to this generation. Mm-hmm. I think every generation has dealt with this. What I see, the strength and the weakness of this generation is that they are more mindful of what's going on inside of them. Mm-hmm. I see that as a strength, but I also see that as a weakness because they can almost become crippled with all that's happening inside, you know, between their two ears. And sometimes they can put more weight upon something. And in their minds, it seems like it's more serious than it really is. For instance, I think anytime somebody says to me, hey, I need to take a mental health day, or I took a mental health day, my first question is, well, what's going on? What's happening in your life right now? I can't ever say, well, you just need to buck up, buttercup, because that's number one, that's insensitive. And especially in our, you know, you do you society and culture, where we're all about acceptance and tolerance and hey, it's your body, do what you want. You know, don't judge me type thing. My first question is, well, what's going on with you? Now, if they say, hey, there's a paper due that I just been kind of, I was playing Fortnite last night. And these are actual conversations I've had with folks. I was playing Fortnite. I've been playing Fortnite for the past 2 weeks and I've been addicted because I got this new skin. Again, it's a
you know what it is. I know.
and I just, this paper got away from me and I can't turn this in. I know if I took a mental health day on Friday, I'd have the weekend to do it. Yeah, I'd get, you know, X number of points off, but at least I could turn it in late. Uh-huh. My response is no. If they say to me, hey, I have a family member who's gravely ill in the hospital, somebody passed away, my response is for sure, take a mental health day. Mm-hmm. That's different. So you have to ask those, probing diagnostic questions. And then you have to praise and support somebody for placing their mental health as being just as important as physical health, because what we know about the mind, not the brain, okay. the brain is the 3 pounds of soft cheese that's in our skull, but okay. our mind is basically our character, our quirks, you know, what makes us unique, our will, our impulses, our feelings, our emotions. What we know about the mind is that the mind rules the brain and the brain rules the body. And so when the mind and the brain aren't healthy, it affects everything from the top down. And so instead of Simone, you know, catching nastiness from people, we should be praising her. This was not a decision she made lightly. As I began to research this issue more and more, she literally could have died. I mean, some of the things that these gymnasts do, and she is the GOAT, you know, she is the greatest of all time. She's at the top of her game. She didn't get there by being emotionally fragile.
Right.
So or it's not like,
as you said,
exactly. We're talking about decades, not just years, decades of her doing this. Mm-hmm. And so the decision that she made should be praised, because it wasn't a decision she made lightly. In fact, she tried to compete and did something and realized that it could have gone, you know, much worse. And at that point, I think she made a very wise decision to bow out and say, you know what, my mind's not where it needs to be. Right now, I'm just not going to do that. And her team, to their credit, her team gave her praise, gave her support. But, you know, it hasn't been, the support hadn't been positive all the way around. Piers Morgan, a British TV newscaster, I use that word news as lightly, newscaster. he basically, you know, was ugly about it. He said, hey, is this a going excuse now? You know, I need to take a mental health day. Again, the choices that she made, instead of praising her and saying, what an absolute difficult choice. Nobody knows what you're going through. It must have been really difficult for you to make this choice. Good for you to prioritize your mental health. Mm-hmm. He didn't say that. And so the takeaway needs to be, it's okay. We need to praise somebody when they truly need a mental health day and they recognize it and they take it. Mm-hmm. Not for somebody making an excuse or, you know, somebody said something ugly to me and I want to take a mental health. No, come on now. This is just, life is difficult. Yeah. You don't have to be a Christian to recognize that we live in a broken world. You can be a secular, you know, atheist and recognize that's the case. Right. But the fact is, we should be sensitive to the needs of our own bodies and our own minds and the needs of other people as well.
Let me ask something very quickly as you're talking about this now, because with Simone Biles, there are a lot of layers.
Obviously,
being a young Black woman in a time when the racism is at a fever pitch in some ways, this is also a part of it. Now, Omar, my question to you, I mean, you counsel young people of color, Black people, how do you speak to that from your position? I hope I'm not putting you on the spot, but for a long time, and I know that you have a level of cultural competency that other people I hope would have, but you know, how do you speak to that?
That is the majority of my client base is African-Americans. As middle schoolers, high schoolers, I do work with some 20 somethings, you know, and Simone is 24. Mm-hmm. So I recognize that the very first thing I need to do when I start counseling with somebody is I have to address the family, because mm-hmm. there is a stigma associated mm-hmm. with mental health. Anybody who deals with any mental health mm-hmm. issue is seen as weak, especially within the African-American culture as a whole. We're speaking about generalities, not specifics. The African-American culture, as well as the Hispanic culture and the Asian-American culture, they just don't perceive mental health as something that is really bona fide. You know, they don't see it as the same level as a diabetic, you know, taking medication. I do. Mm-hmm. As a mental health professional, because I see what happens when people ignore that very important spiritual component, which I think mental health falls under. And so I must educate the family. I must talk with them about the importance of making sure that they stay healthy in mind, soul, and body. Mm-hmm. And then I have to deal with just the tsunami of resistance that's going to come my way. Mm-hmm. I'm seeing more and more acceptance of mental health issues from folks in their 20s and younger, but people my age, mm-hmm. you know, I'm 50, people my age, 50, 40, anybody older than about 40 years old really seems to have a real stigma. I don't know, to be honest with you, I'm not a sociologist. Mm-hmm. I don't know what happened around that 40-year mark, but I'm seeing this as somebody who works with people. I just see the perspective differently. I think maybe because they recognize, you know, they see firsthand how this person is suffering, that they're not making it up. You know, mm-hmm. they're really struggling. And you haven't really seen mental health up close. If you haven't worked with somebody who's stricken with anxiety or depression, which we're dealing with a lot, and our youth are dealing with, to be honest with you, I grew up in the 70s, man. Mm-hmm. You know, love, peace, and hair grease. My daughter, My daughter, who's 19 and in college, all she's known is war. In 2001, my wife was pregnant. She was about to give birth. I remember watching those Twin Towers come down. So that's all she's known. I didn't grow up in a situation like that. So so that takes a toll on people. That long-term, consistent grind of worry and terror and anxiety. In fact, that's what depression is. Depression is untreated, just worry.
Right.
And it turns into the body tries to deal with it. It changes people's thought patterns. It changes people's chemistry. It changes people's brain chemicals. It is a a physiological change. It's not just people's emotions.
Right.
Well, this is something. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, it seems to me it's not just a generational thing, but I also wonder, you know, because growing up in the United States, we, you know, we have for many years, we've always heard that so-called work ethic, that Protestant Anglo-Saxon sense of work ethic that, you know, stems from, you know, what we say, Puritan era, that, you know, these are values that people have passed on from age to age. And what is interesting to me, I'm wondering if now this generation is just less willing to accept some of those values all around.
Or
I should say traditions all around. What do you think?
I agree with you. My late father-in-law was in World War II, served in World War II, and his favorite saying was, like it or lump it.
That's right.
He would just get it done. He would say, swallow it, you bury it down deep. That was his generation's perspective on difficulty. Meaning this man saw, he saw Nazi death camps. He saw horrors that are absolutely unimaginable. So his perspective on stress and anxiety is different than ours. You know, we will never be able to comprehend or understand. Did they need mental health back then? Yes, they called it shell shock. Today we call it post-traumatic stress disorder. And people can be traumatized. Part of it is not just educating clients and their families and communities, but part of it is also educating the population as a whole, because people can be traumatized by images they see and sounds they hear. People can be traumatized in an instant. In fact, what we know about network news these days, if it bleeds, it leads. They put the most horrifying, anxiety-producing, fear-laden images on a screen because it grabs people's attention.
Right.
And so not only does it grab people's attention, but it spikes their cortisol levels. It spikes their adrenaline levels. It makes people unhealthy. And so when you live all day long in a stress environment, it's no wonder people have a hard time sleeping at night.
Yes.
Because their bodies are hyped up all day long.
All day long. And then add to it, staying up all night playing Fortnite.
So this whole idea of the Puritan work ethic that says, you know, our country became number one because we worked so hard, because we overcame difficulties. But you know what? The Puritans and the separatists who you know left Holland and left England because they wanted to be freed to worship, they kept the Sabbath strictly. And what is the Sabbath if not a mental health day?
Right. That's tell us about it.
Right. God said, remember, that's the only commandment. The fourth commandment is the commandment that ties God, his relationship with us, and our relationship with human beings. It is the linchpin that connects everything. And so God said, remember. And if our relationship, if we take the time to step back and to take a mental health day and to connect with him, we have the ability to have some, you know, I always say the Sabbath is not the Sabbath. The Sabbath is a sab.
A Sabbath.
Right?
Okay.
Exactly. Because the Sabbath gives you margin. Mm-hmm. And so when you have that, research shows that when people have lived with margin in their lives, they're happier, they're healthier, they're more creative, they're more joyful. mm-hmm. which is joy is an emotion that is outside of our circumstance. And mm-hmm. we can only have joy when we connect with Christ. And mm-hmm. so God says, I love you so much. I created you and I know what's best for you. So I need you to take one 24-hour period. Now, yeah. as a Seventh Adventist, which I am, I know many of your listeners are not, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. Even folks who are not Seventh Adventists, if somebody decides to take that 24-hour, many people, Muslims, mm-hmm. do it on Friday. Right. Seventh Adventists, first day, Seventh Day Baptists, mm-hmm. Other folks who worship on Sabbath, Jews, they keep that 24-hour period. A lot of folks keep Sunday as that special day, Sabbath. Mm-hmm. Research shows consistently that people who do that consistently are happier and healthier. Yeah. And so if we are seeking good mental health, why wouldn't we do that?
Why wouldn't you? Now, let me ask you this before I let you go, because we're out of time here, but I know you're writing this piece for us. And this is, like I said, it has so many different layers to it. But, you know, what do you think will be the takeaway as we try to, you know, monitor this? How do you know when to hold them, know when to fold them when it comes to yourself? When you see yourself at that line, you're like, man, I'm stressed. What am I going to do? Am I going to push through or am I going to take it back? What would you say?
Typically, I find that when somebody is feeling stressed, that they're already at that level where they're stressed out. And I always tell people, ask the people you live with. Mm-hmm. And they'd be ready for their response. Okay. Don't ask a question if you don't want to hear what they have to say. Typically, people who are stressed out will do one of two things. Either they will over interact or they will under interact. By that meaning, somebody will say, hey, what's for supper? And they'll just snap. Or
they will, that's me, but anyway, go ahead.
Exactly. That never happens to me, right? Or they will withdraw and isolate.
Okay.
To find that balance for someone to say, man, you know, I've had a really rough day. I'm really stressed out. Typically what people say is, how you doing? I'm fine. Mm-hmm. Oh, you're not fine. Why don't you be honest and say something? It comes out as, again, withdrawal. I'm going to Netflix. I'm just going to, you know, watch TV, play a video game, or I'm going to snap on you and I'm mm-hmm. going to transfer all my stress and frustration onto you. And then it's easier for me because as a guy, even mm-hmm. as a mental health professional, as a guy, it's easy for me to snap on somebody. It's easy for me to feel anger. But anger is just a warning light. It's not the issue. It's yeah. telling me there's something else going on. So I would say, you know, talk to the people in your life about what's going on. And then you need to give yourself permission mm-hmm. to take that time to really stop, because you need to have stillness mm-hmm. and thoughtfulness to be able to figure out what's going on. And if you're a Christian, mm-hmm. talk to God. Talk to him. And, you know, Psalm 139 and Psalm 119, they're both really wonderful psalms. Psalm 119 is about the beauty of God's word, but Psalm mm-hmm. 139, there's a bit in there that says, search me and know me. Mm-hmm. And talks about his thoughts, how his thoughts are anxious. Now, he could have used any other adjective, but that was the word he used. Yeah. My thoughts are anxious. Because that's what I find is people are anxious these days. And so he says, search me. That's a dangerous prayer. If you go to God and you say, God, I'm not feeling okay. Mm-hmm. Search me. And then you sit down with your cell phone or a piece of paper and a pen and mm-hmm. God will bring it to you. And then you deal with it. He's going to reveal it so he can heal it. But people have to know what's happening inside their heart, because Jeremiah 17, I think it's 17:5. It says, the heart is deceitful above all else. Who can know it?
Okay. All right. Well, Omar, I just thank you. And I'm looking forward to this piece that you're going to do for us. And this is just another thing that, you know, you and I, we have to share this with people around us. You know, people who are, you know, experiencing anxiety. I know people who have anxiety. You know, for most of us, we might not have that key or that clue that we need to step out. Simone Biles, she knows that if her mind is anxious or if she has that momentary blip where her focus is off, that means she's landing on her neck, okay?
Right.
And so, exactly. But she has given, I guess, a moment for all of us to take a moment and pause and think about how we listen to what's happening with us. Thank you so much, Omar, for being with us today.
My pleasure and honor, Miss Carmela. You know, I love to talk to you anytime I get an opportunity.
Well, we appreciate you too, Omar. Thanks a lot. Hey, listen, friends, we're almost finished here with What's the Message. In fact, I'm winding down really quickly, but I am joined by a recent partner in crime. You all know him as Pastor James Doggett Jr. I call him Pastor JD. I don't know, but we're so glad to have him here. He's been working it out because tonight is the debut of what? Message Magazine presents the Summer Scholarship Games. Pastor JD, how you doing?
Excited. I can't tell you how overwhelmed with joy and anticipation as we're looking forward to tonight. Today is launch day. We get a chance to tonight have some amazing, hardworking students who are going to come and join us on this game show where answers will be given by these students in order to secure some scholarship money. We know that this, since time, y'all, we're shifting into a new school year and people need fun. So what did Message do? Message said, you know what? We're not going to sit on the sidelines watching individuals who are seeking to earn their education struggle. We want to do our part. And I love being able to connect and collaborate with an organization that wants to invest not just with words and speaking life into students, but listen, we're going to give some money. We're going to put some money in their pockets. Over there, we're going to send it to the university. We're going to encourage those who are tuning in to bless them. Y'all, this is going to be a good night tonight. I'm excited about it.
How do we tune in?
So you can tune in on a number of different platforms. Facebook is going to be our main platform where you can go over to Message Magazine, go over to Message and their profile. They will have that going live tonight at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central, 4 p.m. Pacific. And then you can also tune in on the Quarantine Revivals Facebook page, as well as Now Worship's Facebook page. You even got Recharge Worship and Patmos SDA Church Facebook page. So we got a couple of options here. It'll be all over Facebook. We want you to tune in, share, because this is the beginning of, I think, an amazing opportunity that we are, again, inviting all of you to participate in. Let's pour into these kids, y'all. We tonight have three individuals. We have Robert Booker II, we have Edwin Williams III, and we have Kenton Jones, who will be joining us tonight. We're looking forward to it, having these young men, these young Black men, come on this show, and we're going to have a good time together.
Oh, wow. Okay, so listen. This is exciting. This is a first for Message Magazine, the Summer Scholarship Games. You've been watching in Tokyo, but we're watching people go here, go to the mat so they can be back in school. I don't know if you remember what it was like to stand in line without a dime, but I do. And so I'm just asking you to go ahead, tune in, Message Magazine, 7 o'clock on Facebook. We'll see you then. Until then, you all take care of yourself. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back. Actually, this is hiatus for a while. We'll be back in September, another conversation. But until then, you can watch us on the Message Magazine Game Show, Summer Scholarship Games, 7 o'clock tonight. Take care.